Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Scott Weingart, and you're listening to the MCrit podcast. So I have had a very full week. First of all, I just got back from USC Essentials, Mel Herbert's fantastic course, which was held in San Francisco. Tons of fun. I got to meet up with some bloggers and podcasters, Michelle Lynn of Academic Life in Emergency Medicine, Leon Gusso of The Poison Review, Chris Nixon of Life in the Fast Lane, one of my all-time favorite emergency medicine blogs, and Anton from Emergency Medicine Cases, a podcast out of Canada. So that was the good stuff. The bad stuff was the entire MCrit empire of websites got hacked into by an Eastern European hacker. That is not fun. That took days to fix and gave much misery. So if you are a blogger, podcaster, or webmaster, make sure your FTP password is nice and long, is my advice to you. All right, let's get to the show. Today we're going to talk about ED extubation, pulling out the tube you yourself stuck in. Now, there are essentially two kinds of ED extubation. In my mind, there's short-term and long-term. Short-term is the ET tube's been in there just a few hours. You might have even planned to take it out when you were putting it in. And that's the kind I'm going to talk about today. And then there's long-term. Some of my colleagues have patients sitting in their ED for 2 or 3 days. And by that point, a patient who you intubated for bad respiratory failure might actually be better. For those patients, it's a different strategy for extubation. The first case is more like an anesthesia extubation. Patient came into the hospital, they had their elective case, and then the anesthesiologist yanked the tube either in the operating room or the post-op area. The second case is more like an ICU extubation, where the patient's been intubated for a while, they had an actual medical illness. That requires a little more thinking and it's a little more complex. We'll deal with that on another episode. We're going to deal with the anesthesia type extubation. Now, my friend Mike Winters talks about extubation as well. He talks more about that second case, that long-term extubation, where you start worrying about patients' electrolytes and it's more complicated. Maybe we'll even have Mike on to talk about that. But I'm going to talk about short-term extubation. Now, I'm pretty sure I have the only paper in the literature on this topic, and it's in press in the Journal of Emergency Medicine. It's been in press for like a year and a half, because what I've discovered is if you send anything to Journal of Emergency Medicine, it just sits in there as if it's a black hole and never emerges to see the light of day. So they accept your stuff, and then it never comes out in press. It's really kind of deadly. But the PDFs are always there, so I'm going to put the full text PDF on the website. The article is called Trauma Patients Could Be Safely Extubated in the Emergency Department. It's by myself and some of my friends from Shock Trauma, and it goes through step-by-step how to extubate a patient in the ED. So who is the short-term extubation for? Well, a really good patient population is those traumatic drunks. The ones that come in, they're covered in blood, they might have fallen downstairs or something, and they have a strong reek of alcohol. Now, maybe their GCS is 4, and you don't know if it's because of a horrible head injury or just because of the alcohol. Well, the safest thing to do with those folks is intubate them and rush them over to CT scan. Then, if it turns out the CT was negative and their alcohol comes back at 580, you wait until they're fully sober and you yank the tube. All's well in the world. You save yourself an ICU admission. Patient's airway is protected during their incredibly deep, stuporous drunkenness. And so everyone is happy. That's probably the biggest group this is a great move on. Other folks are those tentative endoscopies. Maybe they've swallowed some sharp foreign body or they have an upper GI bleed and you just want their airway protected because, oh God, those endoscopy sedations are torture. Because if you let the GI guys do it themselves, some wacky stuff takes place sometimes. If you become involved, it means you're sitting there for an hour doing the sedation. I don't like either of those circumstances. But if you tube them, then you just put them on normal post-intubation sedation, let them be, and then come back to the bedside and consider extubation when everyone's all done, if what they discovered is nothing serious or they remove that foreign body. And the last case, I think this short-term extubation in the ED is a good idea, is for your overdoses, especially things like GHB or short-term agents that are going to wear off while they're in the ED. So that's your patient group. How do you actually go about doing this? Well, the first thing is, if you know the patient is going to be extubated before you even start, for instance, that endoscopy on a swallowed foreign body patient, I know I'm going to take that tube out as soon as that foreign body comes out, so I plan ahead. What you want to do is you want to have a smaller than normal tube. So I always use 8-0s on everyone for actual intubations where that tube's going to stay in. I'll generally stick a 7-0 in these patients because I want as minimal irritation of those laryngeal structures as possible. And then for this to be enjoyable, you really, really want to have a fentanyl drip and a propofol drip standing by, ready to go for your post-intubation sedation. All right, you have to do that crash intubation on the stuporous drunk. No worries. You use your whatever you want for the beginning, but you really want to switch these guys over to propofol and fentanyl as soon as you realize you might be taking the tube out, because these agents give reliable off times, while if you have them on long-term benzodiazepines for a few hours, it takes a lot longer for them to become to a state where they are awake enough to be safely extubated. All right, next, I'm going to go through the chart in the actual article. So again, the full text, the PDF of the article is in the show notes. So by all means, go over, print it out, and take a look as we're going through this. So inclusion criteria for the ED extubation protocol. They have to resolve the clinical issue that required you to intubate them in the first place. Well, that's a no-brainer. They have to have a sac greater than 95% on an FiO2 of less than and equal to 40% and a PEEP less than and equal to 5. Well, that makes sense. They have to be oxygenating well before you take out the tube. They have to have a respiratory rate less than 30, a systolic blood pressure greater than 100, and a heart rate less than 130. All that sounds good. And then they should not have been a difficult intubation, because if they were, and then you extubate them and they don't do so well, which is actually very rare, you don't want to have to reintubate a difficult intubation. All right, you're now ready to prepare. You turn off your sedatives, which again is preferably propofol. Turn that off. You leave the opioids on, but at low dose. I usually knock them down to 40 or 50 of fentanyl an hour. The reason for that is, while they're waking up, if they're in a lot of pain from the tube, they're going to start moving around and trying to rip it out, and they're not yet ready to get extubated, but they're going to force the issue. You don't want that. So I leave the fentanyl drip on. So you allow the patient to wake up, regain full mental status. If they're showing signs of discomfort, then I give small aliquots of fentanyl on top of the drip, 12.5, 25, just until they're comfortable and they'll lie there. And then the patient should be able to respond and understand commands. So what I tell them to do is raise your arm, and they should be able to do that. When they get to the point where they could hold up their arm for a few seconds, I'm starting to feel pretty good. Then you test them for readiness. I ask them to raise up their arm and leave in the air for 15 seconds. If they could do that, it's generally a sign that whatever muscle relaxants you used have worn off pretty reliably. And we should stop for a second and talk about that. It's generally not a great idea to keep paralyzing these patients, because those take a while to wear off. VEC has a duration of action of around 40 minutes generally, but if the patient has any liver failure, it's going to be a lot longer. It's safer and easier for your life if you paralyze them for your intubation and then you just keep them on heavy opioids and propofol instead of having to reparalyze them, if you're planning on extubating them. If you have used additional paralytics, then just give it a ton of time to wear off, because they'll start moving before their airway reflexes are really back to baseline. So you really want to double the duration of action on these meds to be absolutely sure. I mean, I do shifty stuff like train of four monitoring and then reversal with neostigmine and glycopyrrolate. I do not recommend that stuff. You have to be willing to take the umbrage of your anesthesia department if you're going to start playing around with those things. So I don't recommend those in the ED. All right, so the patient was now able to raise their arm, hold it up in the air for about 10 to 15 seconds. I have them raise their head off the bed, make sure they could do that. I ask them to cough. They should be able to generate a nice, strong cough. They're coughing with the ET tube in. It still works. Trust me, it'll be fine. Just say cough and see if they can. Then I place the patient on pressure support, put them on a setting of 5 of pressure support, 5 of PEEP. I sit them up at 45 degrees, and I watch them for like 10 to 15 minutes while they're breathing pretty much on their own. That's the purpose of this is those settings are just kind of overcoming the tube resistance, and you just let them breathe for like 10 minutes and you see how they're doing. If their SAT stays above 90, 95, if their heart rate stays low, if their systolic doesn't shoot through the roof, if they don't look severely anxious, if their mental status is good and you could talk to them and they look up at you and understand, well then that sounds like it's a pretty good patient for extubation. So now you're ready to actually extubate them. Get a nebulizer, the normal one you use for your asthmatics, and just fill it with normal saline and attach that to an oxygen mask on 6 to 8 liters. Sit the patient up 45 degrees. Suction the endotracheal tube with a bronchial suction catheter. Suction the oropharynx with a Yankauer. Drop the ET tube cuff. Have the patient cough, and while they're coughing, pull out the tube. That'll keep the cords from being abraded by the tube as it's coming out. Suction them again. Encourage the patient strongly to keep coughing up any secretions they have. And then you place that neb mask on their face at the 6-liter mark. Now, I watch them in the department for an hour, make sure they don't develop any stridor, any problems. If they do have any stridor or they have any issues breathing, I just put them right on non-invasive and they usually do fine with that. The last thing to talk about is disposition. I would say at least at the beginning of starting an ED extubation protocol, you admit these patients to a regular bed overnight. Let them get washed, they can get sent home in the morning. Is that absolutely necessary? Probably not. We sent home patients in the study I'm referring to. No patients had to come back and get reintubated. Only one patient was lost to follow-up. So it probably is safe to send these patients home, but when you first start with this, your patient selection might not be ideal. You don't have experience with it, and you don't want to start a protocol like this and then have your first patient come back and have to get reintubated, because then that protocol is over. Your administration is not going to be happy. If you have 6 months, a year of doing this, and you were admitting those patients and there was never a problem with any of them, then if you start sending them home and a patient comes back and needs to be reintubated, no one's going to say, oh, this ED extubation thing is stupid, you can't do it anymore, because you've been doing it for a year without a problem. So I recommend intubating, extubating, and admitting at least at the beginning. So hopefully that all makes sense. This is a procedure for extubating short-term intubations. Patients, you almost planned to take the tube out before you started. So you had that drunk. You're pretty sure it was just the alcohol, but it could have been a subdural. So you intubate them. You take them to CT with the plan in your head that if it's negative, you're going to rip that tube out in 4 or 5 hours if they're still downstairs. Or that sharp foreign body that needs endoscopy. The overdose you think is going to wake up. You test them for readiness, and then when all is well in the world, you pull out the tube. Any questions, shoot me an email. If you were the hacker who took down my sites, you are a bastard. That's all for this week. I will talk to you soon. Have a great day.